Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Greetings, Grapple fans, and welcome to another edition of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the Anfield Index podcast channel, episode 70, I believe. And tonight, it's, of course, myself, Andy Wales, joined once again tonight by a good friend, Guy Drinkle, stepping into the breach as part of the three-man gang, and one of them's stepped aside, Mo Chatra, who has had a busy day, so we'll leave him alone. But Guy, I've tagged you in. We're a three man tag team, so I've tagged you in, and we're gonna go back over No Mercy, aren't we?
Unfortunately, yes.
There you go. Yes. There you go, folks. That's just how good it was. Well, let's say that, no beating around the bush here then. Guy, I mean, I've got to say, look, it's been a bit of a theme over the probably about the last year with WWE. We've come into some of the pay-per-views, and it's been quite a recurring theme, actually, where we're talking about how bad the build-up is and, you know, it not looking forward to the events. And then we get to the event, and lo and behold, it's actually really good, and it surprises us in a pleasant way. Not all of them, but, you know, quite a few, in fairness. This, for me, was the total opposite, you know, polar opposite in many regards. It wasn't a terrible show. It wasn't like a really bad show or anything like that. The build-up, you know, to the two main matches on the card, the two big WrestleMania quality matches as they were portrayed, you know, the build-up was really, really good. It was impressive. I was looking forward to it. And maybe because I was looking forward to it, I felt so let down. I mean, on the whole, how did you find the show before we start, you know, getting into the crux of it?
I have to echo what you've just said, really. I mean, I don't think anyone can say anything else other than it was a letdown. I mean, there was two good matches, in my opinion, or borderline very good matches, but the two main events, as you said, were disappointing for numerous reasons. I mean, the build-up was fantastic, but it was just a damp squib in the end, wasn't it? It was annoying and a letdown, because they got the winner wrong in the main event, and the way it went from high quality wrestling to a finisher spot fest very quickly, and then, well, the Brock versus Braun match was just, that was horrendously poor. I mean, for every reason, that was horrendously poor.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, you know, who wins, who loses, to an extent, you could say, in certain instances, it's particularly important. in other instances, it might not necessarily matter who, you know, who actually wins or loses. If it's done in the right way, you know, you can create whatever drama you want from that. But yeah, we'll get to the dynamics of each one as we go through. Let's start with the first match of the night. The Intercontinental Championship be defended by The Miz with his Miztourage up against Jason Jordan. This was one that I wasn't interested in beforehand. The crowd weren't particularly interested during it, and I've got to say I wasn't interested throughout it either. And that's a shame, because for one, it's the Intercontinental title, and as a fan of a certain age, and I've been watching this for so long now, the Intercontinental title was revered. You know, it was they were always great to watch. And it's, you know, Miz has done an affable job with the title over the past couple of years, whether it be, you know, whatever title. You know, he's done well over the past couple of the years. But Jason Jordan, as talented as he is, and he is, the guy's a talent, and he's a really good wrestler, and his suplexes are fantastic. It isn't working. And I just wonder if it's how ridiculously stupid the storyline surrounding him being Kurt Angle's son kind of takes people out of his character, because it's just not in any way believable. You can't suspend your disbelief for this, and to the point where people are just, it's so silly that they just don't care.
Yeah, I mean, I said, I think it was 3 or 4 weeks ago when I was last on, I was giving praise to Jason Jordan. He obviously had the two matches against Cena and Reigns, and as we both said, it kind of brushed aside the Kurt Angle stuff, and then in the space of 2 weeks, it's just all came rushing back. I mean, you've seen Kurt Angle coming out doing his stupid entrance. You've seen Miz argue with Kurt, bringing your dad jokes and stuff like that. I know it's a PG show, but Jesus Christ, it was pathetic. And on that show, I said I enjoyed that stuff, and the Miz stuff wasn't working. I mean, this just kind of compounded that. It just doesn't work. I mean, Jason Jordan lacks charisma in and out of the ring. There's a couple nice spots in there. I mean, the triple or the double Northern Lights suplex is very good. But there's not a whole lot of excitement there. And I think Miz obviously has the capabilities of working with someone, but he's never going to put on a hugely entertaining match. I mean, he can put on entertaining feuds, but he's never going to lead the way in a match. He just isn't. But yeah, Miz has been a very good champion over the last couple of years. He's probably been one of the only Intercontinental Champions who's actually done anything of note. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to see this anymore, and I don't know if we're going to talk about Raw, but the direction of Miz and the Miztourage isn't going to get any better by the sounds of it. It just didn't work.
I thought you made a good point there, you know, with Jason Jordan, that he doesn't seem to, he lacks charisma in and out of the ring, and that's the thing, is in the ring, you know, connecting with the crowd, doing, you know, having something that really sort of draws a crowd into your character. And I think that was the why there was the pairing with Chad Gable, because Gable does have that charisma. What Gable doesn't, you know, and Gable has the, you know, the ability in the ring as well, and he can talk, but what he doesn't have is that size. So them two together were a nice blend as a tag team, and that worked. Obviously, they just see something in him, and athletically, I can totally understand them seeing something in him and wanting to go with him. But this direction is really not working, I think
his interview after the match didn't help at all.
No, well, that was kind of very subtle sort of hint towards heel, and I was just going to say, is the only thing I think that can help him here and really sort of be a godsend for him is is if this is all just a ruse. It was all just a plan that he cooked up as a way to get himself in a prominent spot on Raw, and he'll come across as an absolute, you know, monster. He'll, that people will hate him because, you know, he's abused a Hall of Famer, a legend. You know, he's tricked him, you know, and that way they can dispense of this whole stupid storyline. But also it'll get some heat. It'll get some tension. It'll get the crowd actually engaged and caring about his character, even if it is to boo him, you know. So it's, for me, that's the only logical step forward. Probably not in the very near future. Maybe that's a slightly longer term. They draw it out for maximum impact. But, you know, that's the only way forward, I think, really, for Jason Jordan. Because, like you've said, you know, the charisma thing will be an issue for him and it will hold him back.
Yeah, I think the more he loses, the more he's going to become a heelish. And then I think they've always got that in the bag in turning on Kurt, because Kurt's always going to be loved. Until he tweaks his character or whatever, but I don't think they need to. I think they just need to see less of him, as we've said recently. But yeah, I mean, I think you've got two ways to go with Jordan. Keep him losing so he gets more annoyed, or eventually he wins a mid-card title, and then in a celebration he eventually tells the truth that it's all been BS, and he turns on Kurt, and then, I don't know, could that lead to him feuding with Chad Gable? If not, Kurt handpicks someone who can represent him. Or if they really want to go big on Jason Jordan, if Kurt Angle can get in the ring, there's a feud there.
Well, maybe that's what it's all built towards. Maybe that's the grand plan, you know, a WrestleMania match for them too. Who knows? Anyway, yeah, next one is Finn Balor defeating Bray Wyatt.
We skipped this one.
Now this was the man, Finn Balor, not the demon, the demon king. You know, and this is despite us already actually seeing Bray Wyatt and Finn Balor, you know, not dressed as the demon, just Finn Balor as Finn Balor. You know, we've seen that before a few times. And this is the thing, we've seen this numerous times now. It's not helping either guy. It's particularly not helping Finn Balor. He needs to get away from Bray Wyatt as quickly as possible. But yeah, like you said, you know, as you hit this, was there, it wasn't good, was it?
No, it was terrible. I mean, I can't even remember one thing that happened in the match. It was terrible. I'm actually quite a fan of Bray Wyatt. I think his career's been horrendously booked. I know Mo isn't a fan at all and never really has been. But for me, he's probably been one of the biggest letdowns from NXT. I mean, he should have been in the early stages. He was probably the hottest property. I know it's under the same umbrella, obviously, but he was one of the ones everyone was looking forward to. And his start was alright with Kane, and then after that it's just gone downhill ever since. It's just had too many failed opportunities, and then they give him we were talking before we started recording how the WWE title run was an opportunity to fix his career, and they just took the piss, didn't they? But yeah, I mean, I mean, having Finn Balor, got bloody similar names getting mixed up. Finn, yeah, he needs to get away from Wyatt, and the whole thing with the demon, Finn, it just seems wasted now. They should have ended it there, because obviously the demon version of Finn Balor is meant to be special. I mean, we've only seen it at SummerSlam in the main roster, so yeah, it's clearly meant to be special, but they keep going on about it every, like, if he's going to roll out every pay-per-view as the demon, it's going to be stupid.
Well, I think it was that balance on NXT where he would come out at NXT on TV tapings, he would just be in normal attire, and when it came to the takeover events, he was in the paint. And it was the nice balance, and the fans love the entrance, and obviously, you know, there was the different characters he uses as well in there. So it's all of that is still in the locker that they can use. Yeah. But what they really need to do is get him with someone else, someone that compliments him, a reason for him to be getting excited and for us to be getting excited about Finn Balor again, because the guy is a great, great competitor. And right now he's been absolutely wasted.
Yeah. Where do you think is best for him? I mean, he's obviously not going to work with Miz now because we'll probably get onto it, but the whole Shield bullshit.
I think that's still a possibility because I think that whole thing with the Shield, and there's rumours of a reunion there. I wonder whether that's them just kind of teasing and they're not going to do that. But then if they do, then I don't know how far away Samoa Joe is from return.
Yeah, that was my shout as well. Yeah,
even if it's a long way down the line, once Samoa Joe's back, you can put them two together, and you know it works because they've worked with each other before. Perhaps, maybe, you know, just maybe it's a run at the Universal Title. David versus Goliath story. But I don't think that would help Finn Balor because I don't see them taking the title off Brock just yet. So,
well, we know who's going to take the title off Brock, don't we?
Well,
there's no other option after. Well, we're going to get onto it. There's no other option now, is there?
Anyway, speaking of the Shield, that takes us to the tag team championships.
To the positive.
Yes, get the positive. Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins successfully defending the Raw Tag Team titles against The Bar, Cesaro and Sheamus. I've got to say, Guy, I really enjoyed this match. I thought this was a really good match. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And we had that spot in there, that I guess the spot that this pay-per-view will probably be most remembered for. Cesaro jarring his teeth 4 millimeters up into his upper jaw.
Oh, I mean, the fact that he had such a good match with teeth pushed up into his bloody head. If he doesn't get a title shot, if he doesn't get a singles run soon, I don't know what more he can do. this was the best match of the night. I mean, I don't think many people would disagree with that. Cesaro and Sheamus, it worked so perfectly. I don't think anyone expected it to work this well. And the two Shield guys, I think they've probably always had natural. I know they weren't the original tag team in the Shield, but they probably always have natural chemistry from the 3v3s and everything they did. But this feud's been excellent. I mean, the tag team division on both brands has carried both shows for a long while now. And this match was just perfect. And the best spot other than the teeth incident was Rollins Frankensteiner into a powerbomb. That was beautiful. It was it was just perfect. And
what about the white noise followed by Cesaro powerbombing Rollins on Ambrose? That was a brilliant spot. I mean, really speaking, that's the type of spot that finishes a match. That's if I was going to be really nitpicky, I'd say, you know, that should finish the match. But, you know, that's being picky. It was thoroughly enjoyable. I mean, these guys just seem to keep coming up with new things to do to each other. I'm guessing they're enjoying working with each other because it seems to come across that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't know we know where they're going, or seemingly going. But The Bar, I don't know how long Cesaro can't wrestle. I think they're saying he's had having surgery on his teeth. And is Sheamus actually going to do a film, or is he just hanging about?
The thing is, he can do a movie around the schedule for TV tapings, I'm sure.
He's not going to be the star, is he? I mean, he won't have the biggest of roles. I hope they stay on TV, and I hope Cesaro gets back in the ring pretty soon, because with Jeff Hardy being injured, the tag team division on Raw is looking very light. Well, it is on SmackDown as well. We've had this discussion many a time.
That's a good point with the Jeff Hardy injury and the Revival injuries.
Oh, yeah, I forgot
it basically leaves the three teams. Perhaps there's the opening there.
I smell a Wyatt family reunion.
I was going to say, perhaps there's the opportunity there for Gallows and Anderson to have short run with Rollins and Ambrose. But who knows? I mean, do you think there's anything in the rumours then of the Shield? And obviously that was a bit of a tease on Raw because, the question was asked to Reigns, wasn't it? It was put to him about that, and he was just kind of, they're doing their thing, I'm doing my thing. And then there was the whole Mr. Raj beatdown. So do you think that there's anything in that, or are they just teasing us?
Unfortunately, I think it's actually going to happen.
Are they that desperate for people to try and get people to cheer for Reigns?
Possibly, but there's nothing anymore to carry the show. I mean, on Raw we had the bloody cruiserweights as the main event of the show. The Shield reunion is clearly just a short plan to fill a feud, because, well, Lesnar's not going to be here till, I don't know, Rumble time, maybe, whenever. So the Universal Champion's not going to be about. The Intercontinental Championships, I know they have a match on Raw. It's taken up Reigns. Strowman seemingly got no one. I know he's going to be fighting Rollins next week, so it may not be just the Miz Taraj against the Shield. They may have Strowman involved somehow, but they're seemingly going to put a lot into this feud, like a lot of the top end talent. And I don't know how that's going to impact the rest of the show, but some people are going to have to up the game, because if there's so much going into this one feud, the women can do only what. So much. I mean, Asuka's coming in, so maybe that'll help a bit. But outside of that, there's not really much excitement on Raw now from what it was 2 weeks ago, where you had Strowman being absolute phenomenal TV. And I'm not looking forward to Raw anymore. I mean, we talked last time how it's upped its game, and now it's just feeling terrible again. Absolutely terrible.
It dropped down a touch. I think, unfortunately, it tends to be that the go home shows are non events now. Mm. That tends to be the case anyway. And then rather than any kind of real excitement being set up at a pay per view, sort of closing off feuds and opening up an exciting new chapter. And you think to how NXT, finished the last takeover, that whole thing, you're thinking, God, I can't wait to the next event now to find out why and what's happened. There was none of that. So there's no anticipation to head into TV. That's it. We maybe have to just give it a chance and see how it goes. But the concern is, again, that we're going to go through this bit of a lull while it's samey for a few weeks. And then they decide to start picking it up again as we start to get Survivor Series on the horizon. So
I think the fortunate thing for Raw is the next pay-per-view's TLC, so they can probably just string together random matches and make it entertaining.
Gimmick fest.
Yeah.
Not looking forward to it.
No, I'm not. I mean, the only thing at the moment's Asuka. I don't know how long away the pay-per-view is, but Raw really needs Samoa Joe back. Now that Strowman's been castrated to a certain point, there's no heel there anymore. Cena's buggered off. The roster's been cut in half by one pay-per-view. it's not great.
It's going to be curious to see what they do. And just to move things along then, the Women's Championship was up next. A fatal five-way match, just kind of thrown together. The way that it was built wasn't particularly good. I mean, Alexa Bliss against Bayley, Emma, Nia Jax, and Sasha Banks. And I said last week, look, I didn't hold up much hope for this. I thought it would just be a bit of a cluster and wouldn't be too much. I've got to say, it really, really over-delivered. You know, pleasantly surprised me. I've got to say, I wasn't expecting much. I wasn't expecting much at all from it, but I thought it was good. I thought it was really good. What they did for those 10 minutes, it was so well paced, and there were some good spots in there, and it was just, that was an entertaining 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, it was the opposite of the two main events. The booking, the build was horrendous, and the match was really good. It helped Nia Jax develop because she dominated the match, as you'd expect from the bigger competitor. The one who suffered from it was Bayley, obviously. Emma, I think this has really helped Emma. I don't know where she goes from this, obviously, but I think Emma's definitely got potential. I mean, people who enjoyed her on NXT probably have known that for a while, but Emma's definitely capable of having a feud with someone. So the women's division on Raw,
they have to get behind her, though, don't they?
Yeah,
like you mentioned NXT there, we've seen on NXT, not only can she, do it in the ring, but she has actually got a personality. You know, it's there. If you just let her do it, let her do her stuff, and with the right type of booking as well, it's very important, isn't it?
She's probably the most marketable out of them. I mean, if they did Bayley right, she'd be very marketable. But look at Emma. She's probably, this is going to sound very mannish, but she's very attractive. She's good on the mic. She's unique because she's Australian. I don't know how big the Australian market is in wrestling, but she's just unique, and she's pretty much one of the best all arounders. I mean, Bayley's been done really, really bad on the main roster. Sasha's been destroyed by having a 1 week reigns every time. Nia is seemingly getting avoided. I don't know if they're going to try and build Asuka versus Nia. And Alexa's doing very well. I mean, I think there is a gap for Emma to, I don't know, feud with Sasha or Bayley. But I'd be wanting Emma to go clean over one of these big people just to get her actually legitimised.
Well, I think the curious thing in the match, though, was, I mean, like you said, look, Nia Jax came out of it looking really good. She looked very, very strong. The spots they did with her, she had a few big spots. She got to, show the power. She came out of that match looking really good. We know, obviously, Alexa does what she does, and she's improved massively, and the way that she kept the title, it kind of emphasizes her character. But in there was that kind of the sub story, that was going on, and that is the teasing, the beginning, the tease of Sasha and Bayley, breaking that friendship. They were pulling each other off the pins. So it was, I think that there's a nice little sub story there, and I guess that's what we're looking to go for the future. And we'll finally, hopefully, we will finally get Sasha back to the heel persona that I think she's the most comfortable with. And we can have a cracking match between them two again.
Yeah, and I think the best thing about that feud is that it doesn't need the title if it's done properly, and that's a big if, obviously, with WWE. But it doesn't need the title, and I was just talking, obviously, there how Raw's not looking pretty, but if they wanted to go big on a main event feud that isn't the Intercontinental title whilst there's nothing else here, you could run with Bayley versus Sasha as a main event picture. I don't know, it's a gamble, but they've got nothing else. They've got nothing else at all. So if they wanted to push that as the main event, and obviously different every week and all that, they could. I mean, it's a good point that they were teasing the heel turn. but it needs something. It needs something. I mean, Sasha's suffered as a face, and Bayley's been done poorly, and this is the feud that made, but probably helped both their careers get to the point they are, because this feud was what probably this is probably what started the women's revolution, as they keep calling it, properly. Because this main evented a pay-per-view or whatever you call takeovers, it was just absolutely phenomenal. And if they can do that in, I don't know if TLC is the right venue for it, but if they keep that, well, just do an Iron Woman match again. it's lazy booking, but you know it can carry a show.
Those matches that they had, they are some of the best matches of that year. I really, really enjoyed them. They were fantastic. And if they can recapture that, absolutely right. It doesn't actually need a title. And because, they, like you say, you've got Asuka coming back. There's this kind of whole thing in the background with Nia Jax. So there is an opportunity there for perhaps, you know, maybe it will be around about Survivor Series time. And beyond, maybe building up towards a Rumble, we could have some absolutely fantastic women's division matches on Raw, and let's hope that's the case, because there are some fantastic athletes there. They're great wrestlers as well. Now that's the thing, not just eye candy, actual wrestlers, all round performers, and it's right that they should be showcased in the right way and given the right kind of booking and material to work with as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Right.
So that at that point of the show, it was attention turning to the big main events. So Sam seems like a perfect time to bring him out, our third member of the gang, Mo Chatra. Welcome along, Mo.
Evening all. As we recall this, better late than never. Apologies for the fashionably late arrival.
He's the John Cena of podcasting, you know. He's a part-timer now. He just comes in for the main event.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, that's it's the fashion that he's setting now. He's a trendsetter, and we've got to follow suit, haven't I? So, goodness.
You haven't missed much. We've just been talking about No Mercy.
I've been missing teeth.
We've got through the main part of the card, but it brings us nicely on to the first of the main events. We'll squeeze the Cruiserweight title in the middle of that as well. So the first part of that is John Cena versus Roman Reigns. Now, in keeping with what I said at the start of the show, is building up towards this event, I felt that it was kind of the reverse of what some of these pay-per-views have been over the past year for WWE, where we'd had terrible build-up to shows, not looking forward to them, and then they'd over-delivered and they'd been really enjoyable. I felt that this was a show where the build-up was really strong, but it was kind of disappointing ultimately. And for me, this was one of those matches where the build-up was fantastic between Cena and Reigns. Really great. Until they got in the ring, and I've got a feeling we might disagree on this one more.
We just might. But I'll let you carry on.
Well, I mean, I guess I've given it away there. Yeah, I wasn't impressed. I didn't think it was bad. I didn't think it was terrible or anything like that. But it just felt like a letdown for me. It was just a bit of a disappointment. It didn't feel like we were actually witnessing a special match. The build-up was special, but then when we were actually in the ring and the bell rang, it didn't feel too special to me.
Yeah, so obviously I disagree. I thought it was a superb match. I really did enjoy it, and here's why. I mean, it didn't feel like one of these classic great matches, if you see what I mean. So,
Rock versus Hogan, for example.
Yes, I mean, it didn't have that kind of same aura But at the same time, look at the reaction of the fans. They were on their feet and going absolutely apeshit on some of those amazing near falls. And I think that's what I think a lot of people had a problem with, is that for a lot of people, it was near fall overdrive and overkill, because, you know, we had Roman Reigns kick out of an AA, super AA, a double AA. You know, that was just a bit too much. Kicking out of just one regular AA in itself is a big deal, and yet to have him kick out of that, a super and a double AA, was just a bit too much for some people. So, I get that, but, you know, that for me added some drama, especially the double AA, because everyone thought, right, that's it now. He surely won the match. And the reaction to that near fall was fantastic and amazing. And, I thought it had, you know, good, you know, peaks and troughs in the match, and, you know, some nice little surprises, along the way. It didn't have, I mean, if you think back even more recently to something like, a Cena versus Kevin Owens, obviously it wasn't, this kind of built up super match, between two, of the top stars in the company. But the flow of that match, those matches rather, from a couple of years ago, were really, really superb, had a really high energy to them. But at the same time, they were really, really well received. And I felt that, other than the first 5 to 8 minutes, the match started to really kick into gear and, really, had a very high tempo to it. And, fans reacted, in a very strong way live. So, I thought it was really good. I didn't think it was, you know, a top end match of the year or anything like that, but, I still thought, you know, it was a very, very good match.
So what about you then, Guy, though? I mean, heard what Moore said there. Because my feeling was it was just, if I go back to Cena and AJ Styles, the kind of matches they were having, I felt like they were telling a story in the ring. You know, they weren't just having a match, they were telling a story. This didn't, in a way, the only story being that Cena was kind of handing the torch over here to Reigns, is the theme of it. But I didn't feel like they really sort of told the story in the ring. They just kind of exchanged moves. And yeah, there was some, I felt like there were some nice spots, but it didn't grab me. I mean, what about you then? How did you take the match?
I agree with a lot of what Mo said. I think especially with a casual fan base, it did its job, but I agree with you. It didn't grab my attention. I think that may be down to the slow start, as Mo said. It did have a slow 7-8 minute start, and I think that obviously didn't help. But I'm just on the negative side of above average, really. I think it's hard to say that it was a match of the year, as Mo said. It was probably good, and maybe a bit disappointing, because this is probably one of the best built matches in a goddamn while. It should have been better, and what you said about AJ Styles, I think that speaks more about how good AJ Styles is than anything. But I think it's fair to say it was decent, but a bit disappointing.
So more, I mean, as I alluded to there, you know, that this really was kind of the passing of the torch, in some ways. That was, I think, the thing that really disappointed me the most, I've got to say, was not so much the match itself, but what happened afterwards. Because for a moment I got excited, because there was a moment there where I thought, oh, is Roman Reigns, you know, as Cena holds his hand up, is Roman Reigns going to turn and clothesline him? And this place will just go absolutely wild. But they didn't. They just did that kind of predictable thing. And it was like, so we basically just got Cena endorsing Roman Reigns. You know, is that what this was? This feud was just Cena, a way for Cena to endorse Roman Reigns. And why do they think that that's going to work? You know, The Rock came out and endorsed Roman Reigns, and the crowd crapped all over that. So, you know, why would they suddenly take to him just because Cena's done it? I mean, am I being harsh there, Mo?
No, you're spot on. But I think we can now come to the conclusion that they simply don't care. Because if they did, then they would have done something creative that, you know, really with fans engaged with what had happened. And instead it was simply, right, Roman Reigns won the match fair and square. Cena is going to ride into the sunset again, do a few things in Hollywood or TV, come back in a few months' time, ready for WrestleMania season, probably around Rumble time. And, you know, in the meantime, here's a clean win for Roman Reigns. But are we going to turn him heel? Oh, absolutely not, because, you know, we can't be having that. It would admit defeat to this audience, this bizarro world crowd. We can't do that. You know, we have to be proven right. We were proven right with John Cena. It took us 12 years, but in the end, they finally accepted him. And by hook or by crook, damn it, they will do the same with Roman Reigns. I mean, it's a bizarre logic, which, you know, if you're outside looking in, you just think he's absolutely barmy and crazy. But that's the way the WWE is, and Vince especially. And, you know, the more vociferous the boos become for Roman Reigns, the more stubborn Vince will be about how Roman Reigns is booked and presented. And, you know, it is obvious as it is that he needs to turn heel to try and do something different with the reactions that he gets. You know, what we saw with John Cena the last 12, 13 years suggests to me that they won't do anything with Roman Reigns other than to carry on as they are. And as they carry on as they are, he'll continue to get those reactions. And he thinks that eventually it will click with the audience, because they can't possibly be wrong. Sorry, the WWE can't possibly be wrong. It's the audience. We're the ones that wrong. And so we have to get used to Roman Reigns being who he is, and we have to cheer for him. And you know, it is just a really sad thing in a way for Roman Reigns, because, you know, I mean, booing aside and some of his other limitations aside, I think he's actually a heck of a talent. And, you know, the last couple of years, if you look at his body of work, some of the matches he's had and taken part in have been fantastic. And even if fans don't necessarily think this was one of them, you know, you can look back and point at numerous other contests that he's been a part of, and you can't simply say it was all down to the opponent. You know, Roman Reigns has had to play his part as well. And the thing is, people are not necessarily booing him just because of match quality. It's because of the fact that they feel he's pushed as the chosen one. Apologies to David Moyes, but yeah.
Well, then this will just make it worse, because this is like, you know, that for years the fans felt like Cena was pushed down their throat, and now they've got Cena. It feels like that they've got Cena pushing Reigns down our throat. What we've already had pushed down our throat. So it's a strange logic.
It is. But, you know, we've seen it with John Cena, and even to an extent with people before him. I mean, we saw it with Shawn Michaels, for example. Obviously, he was presented as a heel, but once Vince, in particular, sets his mind on an individual to be the face of the company, to be the top dog, then there's little to sway the direction that he wants to take that character in. And, you know, he decided right from day one that John Cena would be this clean-cut babyface to usher in this new kind of PG era, post the Attitude era. And now we've got somewhat of a hybrid where there's a bit of an edgier PG, still not going fully back to the Attitude era, but a slightly, you know, we have a bit of swearing, a little bit of blood.
It's all very 12A, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's right. Yeah, PG-13, as it used to be known in the US. But yeah, it is subtly different to the John Cena era. But again, they insist and persist with Roman Reigns as a face, but one that has there's subtle things about him that kind of suggest he's a bit of a tweener. So he'll cut promos which are a little bit heel-like. Just to kind of antagonise that section of the audience that will never accept him. But he doesn't ever go fully fledged heel because Vince doesn't want to pull that trigger, because as I said earlier, it would admit defeat to his audience, and he doesn't want to admit defeat to that audience. And there is the arrogance there.
What about you then, Guy? How did you take to the aftermath of the match, I suppose, you know, that whole going on in the ring?
Yeah, it was a bit of a letdown. I mean, I don't think anyone was expecting a heel turn from either of them. I mean, if John Cena turned heel there, it would have been a lot more surprising. But yeah, it's, I think the worst thing is that they're seemingly running out of opportunities to turn him heel, because Cena's the last ready-made star, and if he's buggering off till Royal Rumble, WrestleMania season, it's probably going to be another wrestling calendar year where it's going to affect Roman's career. I mean, he's obviously had a lot of good work. I mean, from his feud with AJ till Braun, he's done excellent work, really. And running out of opportunity, seen as the last ready-made star on the roster, probably, because there's no one, unless they're bringing back a part-timer, and there's no one who can make Roman have such an impact. I mean, unless he can't do it with Brock, he could probably do it with Rock. Obviously, there's the family connection there, but Rock's not coming back anytime soon, properly. Anyone else? No. There's just not anything there. I don't know what the future is for Roman. Well, we know how it's going to eventually lead to him versus Brock Lesnar, but in the meantime, I think we're just going to have to suffer through wasted potential, really. It's quite frustrating, and if I was Roman, I'd be pretty much annoyed, because when he was in the Shield, he was a good heel for a point, and as a solo star, he just seems like a natural heel to me, and it's just a bit disappointing, really.
So, yeah. I think you both got it there. There's a missed opportunity, I think, because I think you're only talking probably 6 months of a heel run would be great fun for him. I think it would get it all done, get it out the way. People would get it done. They get it out of the system, and then they can move on, and his character can move on. So, yeah, I don't think any of us are now expecting it. I think you mentioned there, Guy, that was probably the last opportunity. But, I mean, talking of, you know, people, of heels turning or people turning heel and all the rest of it, is that what we've witnessed here with the Cruiserweight Championship? Is this a fully fledged heel turn now from Enzo Amore, you know, winning with the low blow and then all the shenanigans at the end of Raw, and even Neville turning babyface? Is that what we've got here, Mo?
It would appear so, yeah. I mean, I think when we talked about the match last week on the preview show, we did speculate that WWE might look to freshen things up with the Cruiserweight division, and that's part of the reason why they decided to take Enzo over to that division. But no, I think it's something different. Look, I mean, the division is stagnant because, and it's not necessarily because of the talent that's there. I mean, I've always said that I think that some of the talent they chose to add to that roster were not the best picks. They had a few too many people that really lacked charisma, personality, beyond being able to have a decent match. And then there's various things, and we've discussed about, you know, some of the issues that they've had with 205 Live, and the Cruiserweight division more generally, on a number of occasions. But I personally haven't got a big problem with this, like a lot of people have, because at least they're trying to do something to add some interest and freshen things up within that division and that roster. And yes, I mean, clearly Enzo is nowhere near the level of worker of a number of the people that are on that roster, but it's getting some attention. So let's just see how it goes. You know, we're not going to be seeing five-star matches out of Enzo He's certainly not going to be delivering the calibre of work that somebody like Neville can. But it's something different. Rather they do something like that than allow the division to just wither away and die. And the direction it was really heading in until he came onto the roster.
What about you then, Gaia? I mean, Neville turning babyface, is that a real disappointment? Because I think there's almost been a natural kind of a little bit of a turn there, because I guess the crowd appreciated him so much. He was such a good heel that the crowd were actually beginning to love him. But does that worry you, him turning babyface? You know, do we lose some of that character?
It depends if it's done right, basically, but it is the modern day WWE, so it's probably going to be done wrong. It's a weird one, because if they're going to run with this no contact clause, has he taken himself out of the cruiserweight division? I mean, is that may be the missing question here. Has Neville ascended the cruiserweight division? Because if this no contact clause, it has multiple directions it can go. I mean, could Neville end up on SmackDown because he's broken a rule? Could that work? I mean, Neville is and has proven that he is better than, unfortunately, what is a sideshow. I mean, obviously the feud there is with Enzo, but you could put any of those cruiserweight stars in a spot with Enzo. And if Enzo is simply there to get more eyeballs on it, who better to have build a new star, whereas Neville's already a star? So I think there's two ways to go about it, but I'm all right with whatever Neville does, because he's fantastic, and who doesn't love an angry Geordie?
he has been a revelation.
Yeah, he's saved that division from
being the king.
Yeah,
the cruiserweights.
he has been very good, and he's been one of the highlights of the WWE as a whole in 2017, because he'd obviously worked as a heel since he debuted on the main roster, and he's transformed his character, his look, the way he works even in the ring, with this heel run, and he has been one of the best heels in the company, so all credit to him.
Yeah,
100%. I will, if he does go fully fledged babyface and actually starts acting like a babyface, I will miss heel Neville. I will really miss him. Long live heel Neville. Right, so that just leaves our final match of the night. Brock Lesnar defending the Universal Championship against Braun Strowman. I just want to get your thoughts on this one as well. Is we had on Raw a couple of weeks back, Brock Lesnar deliver a suplex to Braun Strowman, and Braun Strowman pops up and the crowd pop and go mad. And I just feel that was a moment that should have been in this match, and it would have been a highlight of the match, because I've got to say it was 10 minutes of very, very little. So that little spot on Raw kind of took something away from this match, and that this match actually really needed something like that.
Yeah, it was overall a big disappointment. I actually thought that, I didn't expect obviously a match to go 20 minutes and then to have something of a slow burner type match, because that's just not what Brock Lesnar does these days. You know, he has these shorter, more explosive matches, and some of them work out really well. I mean, you know, if you think back to a couple of the Goldberg matches, they were very short and sweet, but incredibly memorable. And I thought that they'd come up with something really smart for this one between these two. And I mean, I predicted the title change, and I think that was part of the issue here. I think a lot of fans were really geared up towards seeing Braun Strowman become the champion at last. We talk about sliding doors moments, and I thought this was one of them, whereby You know, Strowman had built up so much momentum the last several months, in the last several weeks in particular, that if he won in this match, I don't think any fan would have complained and said, oh, Strowman wasn't ready for a title run, it's too early. It really felt right. And, you know, WWE should have seized that opportunity and gone with it. And, you know, maybe the plan was, okay, let's hold it off until next year, or maybe even until Survivor Series, but let's keep the title on Brock just yet. I didn't think that that was the right thing to do. Just as a telltale sign, I mean, I spot the little things like this. And, you know, we talked about how Brock Lesnar, you know, has gone on to the drug testing regime for USADA, which increased speculation he might be heading back into UFC. His physique certainly looks softer and smaller than it did certainly at WrestleMania. So I thought, okay, well, maybe that's a sign that he is definitely heading back into MMA and UFC pretty soon. So I got a bit excited. I thought, okay, great. We're definitely seeing a title change. But that appeared to be not the case. I think that it's likely we'll probably see something at Survivor Series with a title switch. But for me, it was a big, big missed opportunity, just like we talked about with Reigns and his heel turn earlier on. I thought now was the time, now was the moment to do something and change the title and go in that direction with Strowman. And just see where you go, because what harm is there in doing that? You know, Strowman's built up so much momentum this year.
And it only took one F5 to beat him.
Exactly, yeah. Especially after all those kickouts just two matches earlier. So
he survived a truck, man.
That's a good point, though, isn't it? Because that's still in the psyche of the fans. They've witnessed those matches between Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman where they were doing all sorts of things to each other, you know, through ambulance doors and all the rest of it. And he comes through all of that, but one F5 and he's done.
Well, we went from a kick-out fest to one and done. as you have said, it's the wrong decision and it's a wasted opportunity. And I think, I can't remember who I saw it on Twitter, but at the end of the match, you saw Braun Strowman leant up against the announcer's table looking vulnerable. It's killed probably nearly a year's worth of building. It's stupid. Braun Strowman's not meant to be vulnerable. He's a freak. As I said, he survived a truck getting, or an ambulance getting backed into a truck and then just buggered off. It's stupid. It really is. I mean, they did a better job. I don't know if it was just because Samoa Joe's really good, but or Heyman has a relationship with Samoa Joe somewhat, but they did a better job with Samoa Joe against Brock, and that helped Samoa Joe get over, and unfortunately got injured and all that. But all this has done for Strowman is kill his momentum. And I don't know where Strowman goes from this. I mean, it'd probably be more interesting to see where Mo thinks it's speculating, because I speculated he may get put into this Shield reunion bullshit, because I don't think the Miz Taraj can be an actual feud. So what do you think's next for Strowman, Mo?
Just on that, Mo, then, just on what the guy's saying there, then effectively, has the monster of amongst men just become a man?
The Big Show.
It certainly knocked him down a notch or two, that's for sure. I mean, there's no getting away from that. And clearly, the fact that Brock wasn't there on the show, I think that the involvement that Strowman had with Ambrose, and obviously he's got a match next week with Seth Rollins, suggests that they're looking to do something else with Strowman for the time being. But I think they have to go back to Strowman and Lesnar. It didn't feel like it was something that had reached its conclusion. And we've seen matches like, you know, Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt, where we think it's done, but then they still carry on with it. So by the same token, I think they have to go back to Lesnar and Strowman, because Strowman is the one guy of the last several years who, you know, they've developed out of nothing into potentially a bona fide main event headline star who the fans accept. You know, it's been a while since they've achieved that. So, you know, when they've got all of those stars aligning and they bring someone through to become a top star that the fans want to see in that kind of role and are happy to accept in the way that the WWE portrays them, then they've got to, you know, accept that and run with it. And that's why it was really bizarre why they felt that they shouldn't put the title on him. I thought it was the perfect moment, perfect opportunity, and they dropped the ball big time. And, you know, I think that that wasn't the reason why the match itself was poor. Well, it wasn't necessarily a poor match. It was, I'd say, described as an average match. But certainly the expectations were that, you know, it could have been, you know, really something quite special in its own little way. And it fell well short of expectations. And I think they've got to now make up for it, hopefully, at the Survivor Series.
Yeah, well, we mentioned last week that we thought it, we didn't expect it to be like a classic one-on-one wrestling match, but it could be spectacular. And it was just anything but that. And curious you mentioned that, you know, you build a star that the fans accept, you've got to go with it. It's like the polar opposite with the Roman Reigns thing. You know, that they seem to refuse to turn Reigns, yet, but they seem to keep persisting with trying to get across that Braun Strowman is this monster heel when the fans just keep cheering him. Now they're putting him up against two popular guys, you know, as though, you know, we want you to boo him, but the fans still keep cheering him. I mean, I just find this all really curious.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the thing is, I mean, to that hardcore audience, you know, he's somebody who's this big guy. He's not a classic worker. He's not a guy who came through the indies. But, you know, he's got that kind of throwback feel to him, which is why he's gotten over so big. And you know, ironically, he's gotten really over with that kind of more hardcore audience. And we saw some of that reaction at SummerSlam where he was really over. And we'll see it even more at the Royal Rumble and possibly the Survivor Series. Certainly the Rumble, where, again, there's a big, big turnout of that audience. And, you know, that audience will feel quite disappointed, disgruntled that one of their new favourites in Strowman didn't get put over. And when they feel that they see injustices like that, as they see it, you know, they rally even more behind people like that. And we saw that with Daniel Bryan, if you think back several years ago, especially at Rumbles, they almost insisted that he won. And when he didn't, you know, they were absolutely fuming when, Daniel Bryan would get eliminated from the Rumble matches. And they were obviously rooting for him to win. And that was obviously the thing that really kickstarted this whole anti-Roman Reigns backlash several years ago.
Could we possibly see then them hold off on Strowman, you know, have him win the Rumble and he gets validated at WrestleMania?
Well, that could be the other thing. And, you know, if that's the kind of thinking that let's actually hold it off till WrestleMania, then I can understand that as well, because clearly he's somebody who's really getting over big time. And, you know, if you think ahead to WrestleMania, what are the really big matches that they can go with? And, you know, they've delivered a couple of obvious ones. You know, I mean, Reigns, Lesnar, I mean, they've been there in the past. And, you know, I think if you polled the WWE audience, I think a lot of them would prefer to see Strowman against Lesnar. They'd like to see Strowman going for redemption and trying to get that win. And, you know,
I think the best thing would be to do is triple threat in that situation, because we've seen all the singles matches separately. And obviously with a main event at WrestleMania, you want at least a bit of length to it. And Lesnar only seems to have 20-minute matches when it's a fatal four-way or a triple threat. And his best matches have probably come in more than 1v1 matches. So I think if Strowman won the Royal Rumble, that kind of makes him a star. And then I don't want to see that match again in a main event at WrestleMania, because I think it could go poorly. But if they had just Reigns v Lesnar, I think the fans would just crap all over it, really.
Yeah, I think they will. because I mean it's just a match that. Well, the point is, there's a match that fans would much rather see, you know, and they want to see Strowman in that match, or certainly that main event mix. And, you know, even if they go with triple threat.
Plus, you know, Reigns would win, wouldn't you?
Yeah. But, you know, obviously, there's, as I mentioned before, you know, there's also that kind of UFC, MMA dimension to the whole situation as well. Mm. And if Brock, you know, does disappear, you know, whether it's in a couple of months' time or 4 months' time.
Was it Christmas time last year when he... Was it 200 he appeared at? I can't remember.
I think it was, yeah. Yeah. And that was against Mark Hunter, I believe. Yeah. Now, there was speculation that he would be facing John Jones, you know, at the UFC.
Not anymore.
But that's clearly not going to happen now. So they'll have to find somebody else for Brock Lesnar.
They could do that in a WWE, it'd be fair.
Well, that's a good point, actually. Yeah, they could always. They can't do it in UFC because of
steroid versus steroid.
They could do hell in a jail cell match.
Steroids on a pole match or something.
Oh, that's the one.
Steroid rage match.
Yeah.
Oh my word.
No, I think with Strowman, though, you know, they have to build that momentum back up because it certainly took a dent in it. I mean, it's certainly not something that can't be salvaged, though, and I think they can, but they need to do something positive with Strowman. Clearly, they won't do it straight away, but certainly around Survivor Series time onwards, they need to start doing something. Because, you know, he's somebody that's special, that they've got their hands on, and, you know, they need to make things right, because, it certainly, was something that suffered a bit of damage in terms of his momentum, and, hopefully that will be put right. I mean, they can't be that stupid, surely.
There are a couple screw ups away from just creating the successor to late version of Big Show, aren't they? Whereas they could have a proper, they could have the new Brock Lesnar on the hands, really. But it could go two ways.
Yeah, well, potentially even bigger than that, you know. You know, he's somebody who's got real genuine crossover appeal that, you know, can extend outside of, you know, the typical wrestling fan base, because, you know, if you look at the guy, he just looks incredible. He's even more of a freak than Brock Lesnar. I mean, he towers over Brock, physically bigger, and he's got this really unique look about.
The best thing is that he's seemingly a better character than Brock Lesnar, because Brock Lesnar seemingly fell out of love with WWE and seems antisocial, whereas Braun Strowman seems one of the, like The Miz, he's ready to do the extra stuff out of the ring for WWE.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's somebody who doesn't really look at the wrestling business as just a job. And Brock clearly does. And he talked about that when he was on the Stone Cold podcast a year or two ago. You know, he didn't really grow up as a fan of it. And it's essentially just a job. It's a job he clearly enjoys, because, you know, he has the opportunity to work in UFC a couple of times a year, potentially make more money than I think he does in WWE, but he'd rather stick with WWE because, you know, it means that he doesn't get smashed in the face and instead do that to other people like Randy Orton. So
I think he does genuinely enjoy it when he gets a chant going. Like, you could see it on his face.
Yeah.
When Suplex City Bitch came out, he was loving that.
Yeah, he's got Paul Heyman by his side. He's having fun.
Exactly.
Right.
It's even easier.
So just to sum things up then, no mercy from you two guys. Thumbs up, down in the middle. Where are you on it, Guy?
Oh, I think thumbs down is a bit harsh. I'd probably go in between down and middle.
What about yourself then, Mo?
I agree. I thought there were a couple of really, really good matches, a couple of more that were pretty good as well. But the booking decisions, let it down, so that's why I have to go middle. How about you, Andy?
Yeah, I'm somewhere similar, around about middle, just maybe just below. It was, I think it was maybe that I felt a little let down. It wasn't, you know, the build was great, but the show wasn't as good as the build. So, there you go. Anyway, that wraps up this episode of the Pro Wrestling Index right here on the AI Podcast channel. Of course, thanks to Guy for stepping in and carrying us through.
It's all right. Sorry.
My thanks, of course, to Mo for joining us and adding that expert opinion there. Just coming in, part-timer, coming in at the main event. Mo will be back for Survivor Series and then again
stealing,
the Rumble.
Stealing my spotlight.
That's it. And after that, maybe just WrestleMania once a
year. Speak to you in April, Mo.
Yeah, so my thanks to Mo and to Guy, and of course our thanks to all of you, the listeners, for listening in, hitting that download button, and just being a part of the show, what we do here. And of course, as always, if you do want to get in touch with us, don't forget we are on Twitter at PW_index. But until next week or next time, from me, Andy Wales, here at the PW Index, it's bye bye now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Drew Scott here, and I'm Jonathan Scott, reminding you that life's better with a home policy from American Family Insurance. They can help you get just the right protection at just the right price and help you save when you bundle home and auto. Kind of like Goldilocks and the Three Bears. It'll be just right for you. We love a custom build. American Family Insurance. Insure carefully. Dream fearlessly. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.